In my head, I see a picture of the show I watched earlier. I see Andy Griffith smiling and walking down a dirt road with his son. If I lived in Mayberry, I could tell. There would be a sheriff who would promise my mom and me everything would be okay. He'd take my dad to jail. He'd know somebody who would let mom work. Until we got on our feet, he'd let us stay at his house. Aunt Bee would fix us dinner every night. And that's the way it would be because on TV, right from wrong was black and white, not gray. Neighbors are friends, not strangers. And everybody looks out for one another on the show, but not in real life. In real life, nobody knows anything about a neighbor's family, and they wouldn't really bring us dinner every night or give us hugs. If I lived in Mayberry, I wouldn't have to worry about hurting anyone. I could know to trust the sheriff because I would have known him all my life, ever since I was a little baby, and I could just tell him what happened tonight. He would tell my mom for me so I wouldn't have to. We wouldn't be stranded. We'd be surrounded by safety and neighbors who were friends. I wouldn't cry at night because I'd know for sure that things would be better in the morning if I lived in Mayberry. But I don't. I'm starting to get a little cold. My body aches, especially deep inside. It feels really sore. I stretch out my legs, trying to get the soreness gone, and roll to my back. My nose is stuffy and my eyes are swollen. I breathe out slowly through my mouth and use the back of my hand to wipe the tears that are falling from my eyes away, because I don't live in Mayberry. Once, when I was about 5, we were driving and came to a stoplight. Looking out the window, I saw a packed lot and said, "I'm glad we're not going there. We'd never find a parking spot." At the time, I couldn't understand why everyone was laughing a little. Come to find out that packed parking lot was a car dealership. When I was in the 6th grade, we had to play softball at PE, and I am known for being terrible at sports of all kinds, so no one was more surprised than me when my bat actually connected with the ball. Obeying the shouts, I took off running. I couldn't understand why, again, everyone was laughing. When I got back to home base, the teacher, who was also laughing, looked at my hand, which still clutched the bat, as he asked, "Are you planning on taking that home with you, Tiffany?" Stories like these from my childhood are important to me because I do not remember being so young or innocent. You see, I did not grow up in Mayberry. I was around 5 years old the first time my father sexually abused me. Fragmented memories of the feel of his legs and breath and the terror are still vivid in my mind. The breathless agony that accompanied that shame and unparalleled fear lost the innocent little girl I may have once been away. For Taya, the 15-year-old whose story I just read from, that same shame and terror lead to isolation and the tragic thought that death is better than life. It's been said that all writers leave a piece of themselves in their work. My stories have always been like an elaborate diary. Pieces of my heart and soul are buried in each one. My life, too. This is especially true for a couple of the books, Broken being among them. I relate to Taya in deep, deep ways. Although I never had a suicide plan, I struggled with anorexia and other self-destructive behaviors for years. I know intimately the way being violated can rip your heart out and shut off all light. But another character of mine, 10-year-old Anna, chronicles her journey through abuse in a very personal book entitled The Character, and she grips my heart by mimicking my own way of coping. She writes, "The next thing I remember is the salty taste of the tears that slipped into the corner of my mouth. I hear him grunting. I feel my body shaking. I know what's happening, but then again, I don't, because I'm just not there. It feels like I am somewhere in the air, watching it happen. I see it, but the only thing I feel is the taste of my tears. And then I hear a tiny voice saying, 'You're hurting me.' And I realize that that voice is mine. I feel like I have to scream. If I don't scream, I'm going to burst. Panic is rising in my chest now. I feel it like a bubble of vomit stuck in my throat. I really have to scream. But I know better. So instead, I think of Ash, Ash's face is so warm, light, and kind. He has the best smile. And his eyes are so blue and so wonderfully kind. Ash really has the best face of anyone I've ever known. Ash is more than a friend. To Anna, he's a storyteller and the source of hope, a reason for her to believe in herself. I know the gift of such meaningful and valued friends. Mine are the characters in my head whose stories I wrote down. I started writing around age 7. By age 10, I can remember lying in bed with my hands clenched, blocking the unwelcomed weight, holding me down by pretending the characters were in the room with me. While horrific, mind-numbing events racked my body, I would play out the next scene to be written in my head. Only when I had a pen in my hand could I verbalize the feel of ants crawling in my skin or how much I feared mirrors. Stories quite literally helped me control the shaking of my body and to stop the tears. You see, in real life I was ugly, but the characters thought I was beautiful. In real life, I was always chosen last in school, but my characters were vying for my attention. In real life, we moved far too often to have a real home. Like Taya's, my dad was always one step in front of the police. But my characters were friends who never left. Ever since I can remember, writing has served a greater purpose than being a hobby or a job. It is God's way of helping me heal, of helping me rise above things I could not understand. When Taya shopped for a dress in which to dye, a piece of my heart broke because I understood why she was doing what she was. I vividly recalled my early college years in which I spent the nights writing out last wills and testaments. When Anna and Ash flew a kite and made shapes out of clouds, I saw vibrant colors of hope. A voice in Isaiah 55:12 says, "You will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. The mountains and hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands." Being violated is much, much more than a bruise that fades. It alters who you are and how you think. You are trapped by shame, fear, and doubt. I was silent for 23 years until my daughter was about to be born. To keep her safe, I told my mom. She kept my father away, and becoming a mother myself opened my eyes in a way nothing else could have done. I distinctly remember when my daughter was 5, and she was walking through the house one day, and I looked at her, and a thought just popped into my mind. She could burn this house down, and it would be an accident. She wouldn't deserve anything. It was a pivotal moment in my life and a turning for me. I am convinced that God gifted me with the 2 most wonderful little girls as a way of helping me heal. Still, I'm not sure I could have told if I had not cared so deeply about my characters who had been overcoming tragedy for years. In essence, writing helped save me. Today, I have 7 books published, but over 123 written. I still write on anything I can, paper napkins, even my hands. I still deeply love my characters, their stories, along with God's grace and my daughter's, have painted peace onto the canvas of my life. They remind me that once upon a time, there was a little girl who loved to play dishes and who thought a car dealership was a parking lot, and that that little girl was me. I have come a long, long way as a result of God's sweet gift of the written word. I homeschool my daughters, and every moment they shine a light upon my soul through imagination and wonder is a moment I am able to see glimpses of a little girl I feared had been destroyed by violence. I speak to groups about my past because it is important to know we're not ever, ever, ever alone. I volunteer at church as a teacher, and I continue to write. I have learned that abuse does not have to keep me from finding wholeness. And I'm reminded daily that the breathless agony of feeling your body tear is something not a single one of the 6 million children for whom a child abuse report is filed annually deserves. Not a single one. I'd like to conclude by reading one more short passage from Taya's story. When something is broke, it is not the same anymore. When something is broken, it is damaged. When something is broke, it is ugly, even if it still works. When something is broke, it is useless. When something is broke, it cannot ever be seen in the same way again. When something is broke, its value changes. It isn't worth as much anymore. When something is broke, it becomes nothing more than trash. Taya thought she was broken, damaged so severely she could never hope to be normal. I have struggled with that thought myself, and sometimes I still do. People are fragile, you know. Sometimes they break. Some days are better than others. Some nights are better than others. The other day I saw a video on Facebook of a father and daughter dancing at her wedding, and the happy video scratched the scab off a scar on my heart. I am many things. I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and I do still miss the little girl I once had to have been. But I am more. I am a mother who laughs as she plays tea parties in this little picky. I am a woman who thrives off conversation, playing in idyllic cold creeks, and listening to country music. I believe in the power of faith and prayer and being led forth in peace and joy. I still make wishes on stars and shapes out of the clouds. I still believe in good men. I still love the comfort of characters and the writing. And in the end, it's pretty close to Mayberry.